John Warner IV is the son of the former U.S. Senator who was chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee from the 1990s right up until 2008. He was confidentially given information about some of the most powerful military and political secrets in classified programs, and he researched some of that information to learn the truth of what was really going on the UFO topic and what really happened in World War II. In December of 2023, he released his latest fiction based on fact book, where he reveals the results of his extensive research into the classified world of UFOs, reverse engineering of alien technologies, and secrets withheld from the World War II era.
You're listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala, your source for the uncensored truth regarding the human, extraterrestrial, global, and political agenda. Click the like button and subscribe to this channel. And now, here's Dr. Michael Sala.
Well, welcome back, John, to Exopolitics Today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, I know you did this book in December of last year, Sanity Was a Luxury, and it truly is a fascinating book. And you decided to use the fiction based on fact genre. So, I mean, was that kind of like out of concern for your life, revealing too much?
Yeah, it's historical fiction. It's a lot of speculation on my part and based on information from others. But it's, to my mind, it's a plausible scenario. And it's mostly about the Russian front and the Gustav gun. And Field Marshal von Manstein used it several times, once at Sebastopol and a few other times. And then the gun goes missing mysteriously. It was the biggest railway gun in the world, 800 millimeter shells. And myself and a few other historians think there it might have made sense to build, took them 4 years to build at Krupp's, and for untold millions of Reichsmarks. And we think it makes sense since they knew they had probably had exotic ordnance coming down the line, both atomic and maybe Tabin nerve gas, which they probably used effectively on the Russian front. The official number of casualties that Putin said was 27 million. And I've talked to some Russians who think it's closer to 30 million, as opposed to the Allies combined, which lost less than a million. So something big time happened on the Eastern Front, and we're not told the truth. And so, I get into extraterrestrial contact with the Germans. I think they got help, as rocket scientist Hermann Oberth said, quote, "We had help from people of other worlds," end quote.
Well, what do you think happened with this 1933 Italian UFO crash in northern Italy? And do you think that was something that Mussolini and Hitler and Himmler kind of like negotiated in reaching their agreement and forming the Axis powers?
I think it's a possibility. I have a picture of my great-grandfather Andrew Mellon with Mussolini. I'll send it to you. He was certainly a secret society member to me. I think that the crash in the Black Forest in 1930 was real. I think there have been several crashes around the world since the 19th century, the later part after the Civil War, during the airship mysteries and all that. John Worrell Keeley and Jules Verne and everybody, Tesla. So the Italians under Marconi, with Marconi and maybe Tesla was an advisor, I think they tore that apart and analyzed it. The Italians, there's good evidence to suggest the Italians in the 1930s were working on free energy sources as well, Fermi. So I think they shared a lot of affinity with the Germans. You know, Mussolini was a big man when Hitler was nobody. So Hitler admired him. That history's kind of muddled. Everyone thinks Hitler was, you know, Hitler became more important during World War II, but before that, Mussolini had a long track record. with the secret societies of Europe, Knights of Malta, others. So when they shared crash disk technology, I think it was a two-way street. I think it was very fluid. And the fact that David Grusch mentioned it, along with mentioning my grandfather, Paul Mellon, in his Joe Rogan interview, there's something weird going on there. I think they're letting that out as part of the sort of safe disclosure, because it's before World War II and everything. And you know, it's that whole thing is very odd to me as well. But certainly the Italians and Germans shared everything, to my mind.
Well, we know that. I mean, there were those, what was it, in 1950, there were those newspaper reports released by the Italian engineer and politician Giuseppe Belluzzo, and I think it was the Shriver newspaper articles that confirmed that the Germans and the Italians were working on flying saucers. So, you know, right there you have confirmation. So I think the big question I often get about this particular idea that the Germans, the Italians had developed flying saucers and were weaponizing them for the war is that, well, if they were developing them, then how come they didn't use them to win the war? What do you say to that?
Well, the story goes that if you put some type of high voltage zero point or cold fusion or some other technology in a flying disc, it creates an electromagnetic space-time bubble around the craft so that there's slightly different dimension inside the craft. The problem is the Germans put recoil weapons on there and they destabilize the field. So they're not going to work. And I touch on this in the book, and you'll have to read it to find my conclusion. But my guess is they tried to weaponize them with other things, even maybe using them as a suicide craft. In other words, as a ramming object. We know they tried it with other things. They tried to create planes with reinforced wings and propellers, and it's a mad, crazy thing to do, but you know, in order to ram the American and British bombers. So a lot of that technology, by all accounts, it didn't work really well. It was in the embryonic stage. You know, a lot of their craft, the pictures and the reports say they wobbled a lot and they were fairly uncontrollable. The other thing I touch upon in the book is the possibility of the German breakaway civilization idea, which Walter Bosley and J.P. Farrell and Lavenda and a few other people have postulated. My friend Penny Bradley did. She knows a lot about the Germans. It might have started with Hitler and the SS, because like the Knights Templar and the Teutonic Knights, they were like almost a religious order. The SS used as a true Norse religion. And they were really a state within a state. And so by 44, they had all the technology under Hans Kammler's, he's in the book too, a major character. They might have thought that Himmler might have gathered his generals around him and said, look, the war's going off the rails. Hitler's one of us, and I still love him, but maybe we should start thinking about moving some of our technological assets to Argentina and Antarctica to base 211. And they might have done that. Admiral Rico Botta, we know, had some U.S. Navy spies at Peenemunde and elsewhere. I write about that too. Botta's a major character in my book. And we know he's real because all your FOIA requests you did. And so I think maybe the Germans were doing that by 44. There was certainly an exodus by then, a rat line, but you know, if they did have a flying disc set up, they might have used that as transport. They had long-range Junkers Ju 390 and 290 transports that could have made a couple round trips, you know, easily on given their fuel load. And so there's tantalizing speculative evidence that's the German breakaway thing was an idea probably born in World War I, they were sending expeditions down to Antarctica in the 20s, probably during World War One, in the 30s with Byrd, and probably during World War II, you know, with long-range submarines, the Milk Cows, and possibly some other submarines that were bigger. And probably some of the Type 21 submarines had over-unity propulsion. So it's quite possible that there was a brain drain and a personnel and technology exodus starting in 44. I have it starting in 43, sorry. And I think that probably maybe happened. And then, of course, Operation High Jumped and a deal was struck. And then the 1952 overflight of D.C., it was probably Germans. I agree with J.P. Farrell on that. It was a show of force. And they hashed out an agreement and shared technology.
Yeah, well, there was the famous kind of like search for the Germans or the Nazis' wonder weapons towards the end of the Second World War. I remember Eisenhower was sending divisions. Yeah, that they were gone. And I guess for the reason you said that they hadn't quite worked that out. But, you know, in another couple of years, by 1946, they had worked that out and they had developed some kind of laser cannon and they were ready for Operation High Jump. So, yeah, just how important was Operation High Jump for this kind of like post-war world? Because to me, that was a pretty stark kind of expression or event that really described that the war wasn't over, or at least this breakaway group was just too far advanced for the Allied powers to bring them to heel, and so some deal had to be reached.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. I'm surprised there's a Navy film that's public about it. You could test your naval equipment and your Arctic troop equipment up in Alaska in Arctic conditions. There's no reason to go to Antarctica. There was something down there. We know there was a German base. That's real. We know they kept supplying it during the war. I think they went down there to try to overtake the base, thinking they didn't have the flying disc and directed energy weapon technology mature yet, and they miscalculated. Nimitz was there with Byrd. The story goes we lost a cruiser, lots of aircraft, maybe more. Some people say there were 10,000 Marines. That's an awful lot of troops on a peaceful scientific mission. It stinks. The whole story stinks. And so, you know, I think they tried one more time to get a leg over the Germans, and they missed it by a year. Had they invaded in 46, we might have gotten it done. But the Germans, you know, they probably had a few discs operational, which is all they needed. But remember, we had the leverage of getting every nation, even the Russians, maybe France, the Russian, the Allies together, and all going down there and using atomic weapons against the Germans. That might have worked. And so the Germans probably wanted to play ball, and everyone got together over the years, and it took a few years to get the agreements all done. But probably there was an agreement in 48. And several others that we don't know about, and then the one in 1952 that said, you know, let's not have a nuclear war and meltdown, base 211. Let's share technology. We'll share our whatever portals to inner Earth, outer space, you know, wormholes, the whole, you know, nine yards. And the Germans wanted to keep a lot of aces in the hole, so they did. And that makes most sense to me. They fought once and they said, this isn't a good idea. We're going to need every nation and atomic bombs to get rid of these Germans. Let's just make a deal. The movie Kelly's Heroes with Clint Eastwood, you know, there's a tiger tank in a little French town. It's blowing the town apart and they're all trying to get into a bank with a bunch of gold bars. And so the guy says to Telly Savalas, go out there and make a deal with him. Maybe he's a Republican. And they did. And they blew the bank apart and they took the gold. That's kind of an analogy. A film is an analogy, I think, for what happened. It's like, okay, we got some crazy SS guys. They're high on acid true religion. You know, they got all this technology and they got, you know, all kinds of, you know, who knows, Atlantis ruins, entrances to the earth. They're sitting on a gold mine of stuff down there in Antarctica. Now, let's make a deal. So we did. That's what I think happened.
Mm-hmm. I know one of the things that launched the kind of like a UFO research or interest in UFOs was the 1947 Kenneth Arnold incident. But the interesting thing about that was that these were not, even though people refer to it now as flying saucers, you know, they were flying wings. I mean, he saw what was a formation of nine of them, flying wings. And so, you know, that would be like, okay, now, were these from Antarctica? And I wanted to ask you what you think of the connection with the Northrop Corporation under John Northrop developing their own flying wings and then those flying wings actually being crushed and all development was stopped for like three decades.
All right. First of all, no, I don't think those were German. The Horton flying wing was made of wood. It used two jet engines. It may have maybe flown once or twice. Flying wings are unstable. Jack Northrop tried with prop engines and they tried with jet engines on our big wing. So Northrop made it, but what they found out, it was just too dangerous to fly and unstable. And so it took them, 40, 50 years for the computer power to reach maturity so that the B-2 Spirit could fly. Yes, with anti-gravitics in the wings, you know, so it's low Earth orbit capable. But flying wings are dumb. Yes, the wood flying wing of the Germans would have been radar invisible, but they didn't have even transistor-powered computers. They would have weighed too much, and there was no way they had that kind of technology back then. So I think the flying wings that Kenneth Arnold saw, those were ET craft, and they're not Germans. The flying wing idea was not great. It's still not needed. We've got other triangle craft and everything. The B-2 bomber was, you know, that was great for about 25 years. You know, and that's why they were so expensive. They were anti-gravitic. You know, I've talked to several engineers, NASA and you know, aerospace guys in the D.C. area. And we talk about the B-2s at length because that's a kind of a safe topic. But that's genuine use of ET technology. So that whole story doesn't hold water whatsoever. People aren't thinking. They're just like, oh, Jack Northrop, the flying wing. And it's like, no, they couldn't get it to work right. It was dangerous as hell to fly. They didn't have computers back then.
Right, okay. Well, it's very, very interesting what happened to that flying wing. I know Bill Tompkins kind of made a big deal of it. He thought that there was some genuine aviation innovation there and that someone wanted to crush that. And I mean, it's very interesting that John Northrop was saying that this guy, Stuart Symington, who was the Secretary of the Air Force, gave him an ultimatum saying that, well, you got to partner with Voltaire and Consolidated Air and then, you know, you can go forward with this. And if not, you're going to regret it. And they didn't go with it. And then Symington gave the order that whatever they had, four or six B-49 prototypes were literally crushed. So it seemed to be something that was going on there, something deeper.
Well, let's speculate. So in the late 40s, they weren't working well. They could have developed them into the 50s with T. Townsend Brown and John G. Trump and all the electrical physicists to give them anti-gravitics back then. But something didn't add up because the United States military, if they got an advantage, they'll use it. So it might have been aircraft manufacturer politics or whatever. Remember, there's a lot of funding going into Northrop to develop these things. And, of course, they use them in the movie The War of the Worlds, 1953? they show them. So there's advantages in drag, fuel economy, and radar visibility. But we finally did get the flying wing in the B-2, late 80s. So I just don't think it was mature enough back then to really be viable. Even if you slung any gravitic technology on it in the 50s and 60s, you know, the missile idea was gaining favor. We don't need bombers to deliver nuclear weapons anymore. Although the B-52 is alive and well, you know, it's going to be a 100-year-old aircraft soon.
So what do you think about this whole kind of Nazi Fourth Reich connection to current geopolitics? I mean, you know, geopolitics is predicated on the idea of these major states that all vie for power, you know, the balance of power, or the kind of like, you know, creating these supranational organizations, the European Union and the United Nations, that they all kind of battle for power, or global economics and markets and so forth. How do you think this whole Fourth Reich connection plays out in the background of all of that?
Well, this gets back to my conversation with my grandfather in the 80s when I was a young man. He was there with Patton and some other generals in the Skoda Works to view some of the Wunderwaffe weapons. And he knew von Braun and Kurt Debus, I think. He definitely knew von Braun because my mother remembers meeting him when she was little. And they came to his house in Virginia. So there's definitely, you know, the Fourth Reich Germans, they're still a thing. The secret space program, people talk about the Germans in space and other colonies and their mercenaries. Knowing the Germans, I think it's a very good possibility that they're out in space well before anyone else in the modern era. And, you know, fascism is part of our world. I mean, there's no free press. There's no non-corrupt government in the world. You go to any country, it's all fascist if you dig deep enough. And, you know, it's just the way our world is constructed. And so the Fourth Reich worked because America wanted it to work. And people like my grandfather, the Mellons, the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, the DuPonts, they all profited from this type of system. Remember that fascism runs on, has a big corporate element attached to it. It doesn't work without the big corporations. And it's just a better system than communism, which is just a big lie. And so, I mean, to look at things pragmatically, you have to sort of get out of your head and you know, forget your morals and ethics for a moment and try to get in the heads of these people in these roundtables. You know, they see the world quite differently from the average person. Everything is status quo. We're probably doing a brisk trade with ET, have been for, I don't know, forever. You know, going back into antiquity, it makes sense. And so no one wants to disturb that apple cart, you know, the status quo. But unfortunately, the nature of disclosure right now, I mean, it's falling apart. You know, Chris Mellon, Hal Putoff today was, you know, outed on Twitter with a video from the Soul Foundation saying, well, at the Arlington Institute with John L. Peterson, we got together a couple hundred people in 2005 and we discussed disclosure, and the corporate guys and the military guys and the government guys said, no way, bad for business. And they chickened out. So, I mean, that's the kind of people we're dealing with. They're like, should we disclose for the public? Nah, too disruptive. And it's not good for business. This is, you know, the world is run by corporations. It's just a fact. So, you know, that's the state of play. The Fourth Reich is alive well. Doesn't mean you have to be German, although there are Germans around. You know, it's state of mind. It's a political, you know, ideology.
Yeah, you mentioned corporations, and I think that's important to emphasize that even throughout the Second World War, there were a lot of American companies that were working with, you know, they had German affiliates and vice versa. And so the war was kind of like, you know, like this inconvenient event, but behind the scenes, these corporations were still collaborating, and they were planning for a post-war future. And you know, the post-war future was one with all this advanced technology. And the guys that built the flying saucers for the SS, the Nazi SS, I mean, we're talking about the Krupp Corporation or the IG Farben and all of the major aerospace or aviation companies, German companies. I mean, they had US affiliates, and I think after the war, it was easy for these corporate leaders to reach agreements and then bring their political people together to reach the kind of official political system or the agreements between the politicians. Well, so what do you think about the whole corporation secretly dominating or playing this kind of leading role behind the scenes for the German secret space program and eventually the American?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the corporations have been doing this since the 19th century. War is only inconvenient for some. It accelerates business as long as the right people win. World War II, you know, the Allies sort of won. Yeah, a little, you know, sort of. You know, the Japanese lost. The German state lost, but the SS didn't lose. No one signed off on it. So, I mean, you know, corporations benefited. Fuel oil was going from Standard Oil through Portugal, through straw men, other commodities, Ford trucks built under license in Germany. I mean, it, you know, business accelerates during war. It generates huge profits for people at the expense of, you know, some smaller countries going down the tubes. It's just dog eat dog. Who's the bigger dog? So, you know, it's nothing really new, but it's definitely 20th century. That's a thing. And it's still going on. I mean, there are people who ginned up the fight between, you know, the Palestinians and the Israelis and the Russians and the Ukrainians, and it's all generating cash for a lot of people. You know, I mean, this is just the way it's done. Yeah, there's some geopolitical stuff in there, but, you know, I'll tell you what, a friend of mine told me that all the Middle East wars, you know, the Anunnaki, the story is they split up into several bloodlines and factions and moved to Europe and Asia and everywhere, Middle East. And all those wars in the Middle East are just those bloodlines fighting one another over which Anunnaki god owns them. Yahweh, Allah, God, whatever you want to call it. You know, so, I mean, is this ideology-based? It's religion-based, all these wars, and they're money-based. And it's all about furthering technology because unacknowledged programs get funded in wartime. And now in the United States, I'd say since the 70s, they just get funded, period. You know, I think we have vast amounts of technology. We're out in space fighting. That makes sense to me. Space mining bill. Look at all the companies with mining equipment. You know, look at their profit margins. And they're basically, there's a lot of corporations out there that are too big to fail because they're involved with the national security stake and the military industrial complex. And they are never going to fail. You know, and it's just a fact of life. At this point, I think, you know, it's what I told John L. Peterson when I met with him in June. We talked about this 2005 meeting with Hal Puthoff and everybody was there. And John said there were 40 options on the table for disclosure. And out of that 40, there were only three that didn't involve a French Revolution, economic collapse, turmoil. And I asked him, you know, we were having lunch together, and I asked him, I said, John, do you think those three options are now off the table? And he said, maybe. And we had a very sad 3-hour talk. I mean, it's, you know, the United States has so much to lose in disclosure. I really think it's going to be Russia, China, Israel, I mean, not Israel, but India, France, Japan, maybe. You name it, North Korea, you know, they'll do it for us. And then America will be on its back foot and we'll be playing catch up in perpetuity. And man, there won't be enough hot air and lip service to lay on to cover that up. It'll just unwind like a giant snowball melting on a grill. It's just a mess. They've waited far too long. They had to, probably because the Black Hats, I told John Peterson, I said, the Black Hats probably had to get too old and die off before they could even contemplate even what Chris Mellon and all his gang are doing, a dipshit, a semblance of disclosure. They're not really doing anything. They're just talking about it. And, Grush and everything, it's just a nothing burger, so to speak. I don't know what you thought of the hearing. I thought it was a dog and pony show. I think Tim Burchett is Little Green Men and aliens and flying saucers. They made fun of it.
Well, I thought that this comment or this interview where you have Hal Puthoff talking a little bit about what was discussed at that meeting, and you mentioned it was organized at the Arlington Institute 2005. John Peterson was involved in setting that all up. One of the things that really got my attention with Puthoff's revelation of ownership of the crashed materials, that you have these materials that are recovered from all these crashed operations. You have there being dozens, as many as 100. I think Ryan Wood just came out with an updated edition of Magic Eyes Only's, and he has 104 cases that he examines of crash retrievals. So what was really interesting was that Hal Puthoff says that when these materials are recovered and some of them are handed over to the corporation, whether we're talking Lockheed, Northrop Grumman, General Dynamics, whoever, the corporations say, well, we're going to work on these, but, we need to own it. And so you need to fund us through something called an internal research and development. And once it's funded that way, then it belongs to the corporation. I was shocked to hear that. It's like, wow, so that means even though the U.S. military, the intelligence community go to all this effort to find and retrieve and bring back to the country these crashed craft, then when the corporations start to study them, it becomes their property. That's incredible. So you want to comment about that?
Yeah, I've known that actually for a long time. When my dad was Secretary of the Navy, he took me to naval bases, to Grumman, and to Lockheed Martin, to all these contractors that were doing work for the Navy. And in the 80s, I would discuss with him, just military matters, nothing to do with the UFOs per se. And he said, oh, that's a common tactic. If you don't want Congress or the public to know about a certain technology, you give it to the corporation and they have the rights. And of course you can't subpoena that. That's under national security. They're working under national security protocols. So it's a convenient, apparatus, to do that. And then people can get up, like Hal Puthoff or Chris Mellon or, anybody and say, well, sorry, I'm not aware of that. And they may be telling the truth because, the military, the CIA wasn't involved with that. It was a corporation who did that. And so they're telling the truth technically, but it's all a big lie. They're all in cahoots with one another. That's the plausible deniability has to be all over the place. But that's going to come back to haunt them because, like I said, disclosure is just going to happen and it's all going to start to unravel and they can't hide behind that kind of stuff forever. It's public knowledge in the disclosure movement. The general public doesn't give a damn about any of this, but that's the corporations, the military industrial complex, they own a lot of the technologies and they have the legal right to keep them secret. So, yeah. And the Navy can get up there with Kirk, or the military, Pentagon, Kirkpatrick, and say, we have no knowledge of, zero-point energy cube. Sorry, we have no knowledge because technically he's telling the truth and that corporations have the knowledge on that. Of course, they do have the knowledge on that because they use it in satellites and other things, and it's solid state, 0 point energy. You know, and so it's a runaround of technicalities and plausible deniability.
Well, I remember listening to Emery Smith where he talked about his service with the Air Force when he was stationed at Kirtland Air Force Base in the mid-1990s. And he says that he was brought into a program involving dissecting or extracting tissue samples from some of the extraterrestrials that recovered from the crashes. And he saw the extraterrestrials, he saw many different types, and he saw some craft. But he says that even though all of this was happening on Kirtland Air Force Base, all the control was exercised by this corporate facility there on the base. So, you know, you have the different layers of security. You have the military security, and then you have the corporate operation within the base. So it's like it's a layered process. And he said that you could not get access. Even if you were the commander of Kirtland Air Force Base, you could not get access to that corporate facility on Kirtland Air Force Base that was running all of these ET-related projects. So, yeah, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. If you and I came up with the idea, I'd say, well, keep, you know, X program, you know, unacknowledged USAP, keep it corporate. Do it on a military base for security reasons. Compartmentalize the hell out of it. And only people in the know will have access to it, you know. And Emery Smith, I remember him telling those stories. You know, it makes sense. You know, he could work on one program in a room, but he couldn't go down the hall to another and talk shop with anyone. He couldn't even do that at the cafeteria. You know, this is how they're run. They're run severely compartmentalized. So you add in the corporate angle, plausible deniability, compartmentalization, you know, and military overall national security protocols on top of that, man, you've got an ironclad program. You know, who the hell, you know, everyone's under the NATSEC protocols under death, you know, terminate orders. So they're scared out of their minds. So, I mean, it's easy to keep secrets, but then it's not. These aren't well-kept secrets. We're talking about them. You know, it's, yes, we're the fringe, okay, whatever, but, you know, this is going to become mainstream in the next 20 years. You know, I'm doing this because I care about my grandkids and I care about my friends' grandkids. What kind of world are they going to inherit? You know, this, everyone's going to have a Elon Musk chip in your automated car and work in a cubicle for 12 hours a day. You know, you drive your Tesla. It's madness. And I don't want that. You know, we live in an insane asylum of a world. You have to know the entirety of history. I've studied it. It only makes sense when you plug ET in the mix. I'm sorry. And that goes with religious history too. And ask Joseph P. Farrell about that. He's a theologian. And he's like, oh yeah, none of it makes any sense until you figure out who the angels and demons really are. And then it makes a lot more sense. So, you know, a lot of this is commerce. You know, I mean, ET trade, it's been going on since before the human race existed, in my book, for billions of years. Earth has always been an outpost for this, that, and the other. Genetic experiments, mining, resource development, research. You know, we're latecomers to the party. And to a lot of these ETs, we're just a commodity to be traded and utilized.
Yeah, that is a pretty big issue. The kind of like commerce that's being conducted in deep space involving extraterrestrials and who's conducting it all on our side and how much is being shared. I just wanted to get your take on Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, because I know you've met him. William Tompkins said that Admiral Inman was involved in getting all the critical components for a U.S. Navy-run secret space program. And I actually did have a phone conversation with Admiral Inman, and he denied what William Tompkins was saying, which was very interesting. He just denied it all. But nevertheless, I mean, he did work with major corporations in procuring parts for the Navy. So do you think Tompkins was accurate with what he was saying about the existence of a Navy secret space program and Bobby Ray Inman kind of like working with different corporations to supply parts for it?
Oh, without a doubt. I remember Bobby Ray Inman when I was a kid and my dad was in the Pentagon. And then I remember him meeting him several times in my dad's office when the Navy, my dad would always bring me in because I was always interested in the Navy. And he knew I was a historian. And he would bring me in there in the 90s. And, you know, I remember Admiral Inman. I even asked Admiral Inman back in the 90s, you know, is the Navy going to release some of its very high technology, you know, UFO kind of things? And he was very hopeful that, you know, in the 2000s, that was going to happen. Of course, it didn't. And the rumor is he was MJ-1 of the MJ-12 group, you know, whatever they call themselves. They change their name every couple of years, probably. And I believe that. It makes sense. I'm not saying he's an evil man. I don't think so. I think he really has this country's interest at heart, but he never reveals anything in his interviews. I don't even know why he does them. It's a mystery to me. But I think he's one of these old hawks. And my dad said he was a very, very important man, probably more important than any senator back then in the 90s. You know, he was tasked with controlling all this technology back in the day. And he had a responsibility. I mean, we do have enemies. You know, they are trying to prevent World War III and other things. So there's a lot of things at play. However, these roundtables and this, like this meeting in 2005 at the Arlington Institute, these people are playing God. They don't have a right to keep the human race in the dark. This has to do with commerce and profits and military prowess and dominance. It's easy to see that. I've known it all my life. I've seen it all my life. I've grown up with Congress and the Pentagon. You know, I agree with some of it, but it's gotten way out of hand, especially now. And, you know, they've got technology that can crack the Earth in half and probably blow up every planet in this solar system. I really do think we have that technology now. And I don't think we have the wisdom. And I think that might be what's pushing internal disclosure now, is that some gray hats and some ETs are like, enough is enough. You guys got to do something, or, you know, we ETs are going to do disclosure for you, and you won't like that. But my guess is it's going to be other countries to stick it to the United States because they're tired of us swinging our big stick around. And so, you know, these corporations like Michael Herrera was talking about the UFO trafficking humans and drugs in Indonesia. That was at the Greer Conference in June. You know, I believe that. These corporations hiring private mercenary armies like Wackenhut, Blackwater, and all the rest to do their dirty work. And they don't care about the U.S. military operations going on. They're like, you didn't see anything. Turn around, get the fuck out of here. You know, this is what's going on, is these corporations with their technology, they've gone so rich and powerful. They can hire their own private armies and maybe even blackmail the U.S. military. That's a grim thought.
Yeah.
You know, you always see these movies they come out with about, you know, some evil Bond villain like Elon Musk blackmailing the U.S. government and military, saying, I'm going to blow up half the world if you don't, you know, make me God of the world. So, I mean, we might be seeing that, too. That's a grim scenario.
Yeah, well, Stephen Greer's most recent press conference where Michael Herrera and others spoke was, I thought was, quite good in bringing out those points, like what you mentioned about, you know, the corporations or the ones that were controlling these reverse engineered spacecraft were using them for things like the drug trade and human trafficking and so forth to raise enormous funds off the books. So I just wanted to get your take on that one element of Stephen Greer that's always led to kind of like, I guess, conflict between us. That is that his claim that all extraterrestrials are only positive. And I know you have your views on that. I certainly have mine. So why do you think he's doing that? I mean, what's that all that about? Because it doesn't seem to be something that's tenable given, you know, the thousands of reports out there saying otherwise.
Well, I've always supported Stephen Greer. He let me speak briefly at the conference. I thought it was really good. I asked him about his position on that. I just said, you know, listen, man, what's going on? He said that an ET one night told him that ETs were all benevolent and that it was just humans that were regressive. And I said, that doesn't make sense with history, given the Anunnaki history and Moloch and all the Greek and Roman gods and, you know, wanting us to worship them and all this stuff. But he would have none of it. You know, everyone's got their own thing. We all have our differences of opinion. That's his. I don't agree with him on that. It only makes our sister history only makes sense if human beings have been dealing with both sides. I mean, this is a duality universe we live in, yin and yang, folks. So you can't just say, oh, everyone out there is benevolent. That's complete bullshit. We've been doing business with the regressive guys, the bad guys, the black hats out there. That's the whole problem. You know, Earth is this horrible war zone and insane asylum. I mean, come on, you know, it doesn't make any sense. So that's his thing, but he's done, you know, 35 years of hard work, and I applaud him. So if that's what he wants to believe in, that's fine. Everyone's entitled to their reality, you know, but that's not mine. I'm a realist. And I don't, you know, everyone coming out with everything, you know, too positive, and everyone's, oh, you know, everything's going to be wonderful if we just meditate. And I don't believe in that. We have to do a lot of hard work, and it's going to be, you know, dangerous work, and people can get killed or hurt. You know, disclosure is not going to be bloodless. I'd like it to be. There's no way around it. We're dealing with too many black hat people around the world. And they're dealing with too many black hat ETs. To my mind, the positive ETs out there seem to be a little naive on some of this. They're like, oh, you humans have got to do it yourselves. And I agree. We have to do it ourselves. We're going to learn a good lesson. But man, it's like one David versus 10 billion Goliaths. Their advice is not practical. You know, we got a slingshot, and they're like, oh, you know, go fight the enemy with black triangles and directed energy weapons. It's like, well, all I got is a slingshot. I mean, you know, out of the disclosure movement, which is several million strong around the world, probably only 10%, to my mind, maybe 5%, really get the whole big picture.
Well, I agree that I think we have both.
Infighting, I'm guilty of it too. We're bickering and infighting on Twitter and everywhere. And nobody can agree on anything. I mean, it's, wow, what a perfect storm. It's a perfect storm.
Hasn't that been contrived, I think, by the elite to create this friction where they're just flooding the airwaves with all of these fake narratives and mixing it with the genuine narratives? So even today, I mean, that's the big challenge, is like to sort out, well, who are the genuine contactees? Who are the people that are genuinely having contact with these positive extraterrestrials that are wanting to help? And who are the ones that are genuinely part of these secret space programs and revealing what's going on, as opposed to those that are, you know, delusional or they're MK Ultra? And just making sense of all of that is very challenging.
It is. You know, I think someone like David Grush was well-groomed. I think he might be an MK Ultra victim. He seems very strange and animated. And so they're going to roll these people out. They're going to try to slow down disclosure as best they can. But the more they slow it down, Michael, the worse it's going to get. And it's just going to be horrendous. They've waited so long. Yeah, they've prepped the public a bit with Hollywood movies and TV shows and some books and things, but that's a big step for the ordinary person to merge that reality, Hollywood movies and TV and the real thing. That's a big gulf to traverse, and it's going to cause a lot of, you know, paradoxes and chaos in people's minds. You know, it boggles the mind. Right now, it's a sinking ship. The deep state, the United States, you know, on this topic, it's a sinking ship. But boy, are there a lot of people trying to patch the hull to slow down the rate of water intake. But after a while, it's going to sink. And a lot of us are going to have to be there afterwards to try to help people and hold their hands and, you know, friends and family and all that stuff. That's all we can do. And, you know, they've ruined it. It's just like everything I've known about the United States government, the military and corporate world. They'll drag their feet till the last day, and still they'll drag their feet. And even with disclosure from other countries, they'll still deny it. Deny, you know, cover up, disinfo campaigns. They'll do it until, you know, it's right in their face, and they still will do it. And I think it's the effect. Some of it is the effect of regressive ET influence saying, hey, you know, you guys drag your feet for as long as you can. And as far as the world's elite go, well, I know a lot of elites growing up with them. 95% are just idiots. They really are. They don't know anything about this. The 5% involved with the Knights of Malta and, you know, secret societies and big round tables and banks, the Trilateral Commission, the CFR, you know, those people, the 5% of the elite world, yeah, they know. We're all going to, you know, it's going to come crashing down over our heads. You know, I've talked to wealthy people about this, and they're like, I know what you're talking about, but I don't want to get involved. And I'm like, well, we're all going to get involved at the end. And I'm like, well, you know, I'll wait 20 years and then I'll swallow a gun or something.
Well, there does seem to be a kind of narrative that's forming that's getting a lot of mainstream media attention. And that's, you know, featuring people like Bob Lazar, Eric Davis, David Grass, George Knapp, even Tim Burchette, that are saying that, yeah, these non-human spacecraft have been recovered, they're being studied, but hey, we haven't made any progress in understanding them or reverse engineering them. So you know, what's going on there?
That's a huge lie. I knew when Tim Burchett got up there, I knew he was on the take. You know, these senators and congressmen and representatives, these politicians, all they care about is re-election and being in on the next big thing to polish their stars. Man, I've been close to it most of my life. I mean, military politics, civilian politics. Tim Burchett is, you know, he's as janky as a $3 Confederate bill. You know, it's unbelievable. You know, all these guys, Schumer, it's all lip service. They don't care about crash retrievals or dead alien bodies. They could give a rat's ass. What they care about is the dirty laundry that you and I are talking about. The stuff Michael Herrera was talking about, the fighting in space, the secret space programs, that's what they want to slow down. They want to keep the public's mind on basically a 1970s version of disclosure, which is flying saucers, sightings, strange videos, and crash retrievals and dead alien bodies. It's entertainment. It's not disclosure. So, you know, them, and then they make fun of it every time. Even Tucker Carlson, you know, if you watch his videos, he talks about UFOs and disclosure and everything. And then at the end, he giggles, you know, like his interview with Gary Nolan. Look that up. And then they start giggling like schoolboys about it. Therefore, the whole conversation has been destroyed because they've made fun of it. That's a common tactic. If you want to destroy a narrative, if you want to crack it apart, you want to confuse the public, that's what you do. And all these people associated, you know, everyone's up there, oh, Tucker's on our side. Well, bullshit. That guy, he was at CNN and Fox and everything like that. You know, he's one of them. There's no free media around the world. You know, I'd like to tell the positive ETs, you really want to help us? Give us a free press, a worldwide one, to give us a chance, a voice. You know, you don't have to help us with anything else, but just give us a free press. There's none of that around the world. There's no free press. I monitor the world news consistently with my wife. She's ex-CIA. we could tell they cover softball topics and war. And that's it. And then in America, it's politics 24/7. So, you know, there we are.
I know that Daniel List, who runs the Dark Journalist channel, he approached David Grush and had an email communication with him and learned that Grush is being muzzled or controlled by your cousin, Chris Mullen. So what's going on there? Why is Chris Mullen, on the one hand, trying to put out that, you know, he's pro-disclosure, but on the other hand, he's muzzling David Grush from going on the Daniel List's Dark Journalist show?
It's, to my knowledge, Grush reached out to Daniel List first. And he said that to him. They had a conversation. That's between them. But Grush mentioned that Chris Mullen forbade him to do that. They're playing mind games with all of us. That's for sure. Chris has always been Mr. Cool, Mr. Aloof. That's his personality. He's very distant, very cool, calculating. And for him to lash out at Daniel publicly on Twitter, and then his son, Hunter Mullen, lashed out at me, which I think is very low tactic. He's only just out of Harvard. You know, they leave the kid out of this. He doesn't have any life experience to deal with what we're talking about. I understand he wants to defend his dad. That's fair enough. I'd probably do the same thing at his age. But, you know, so it's a very strange moment where Chris lost composure and went after one of his biggest detractors. And, of course, I'm on Dark Journalist, you know, quite a bit. And I talk about, you know, Chris. So it's a very strange series of events as to why that happened. They could have done it on purpose, but I can't figure out exactly how that helps their operation. You know, with Leslie Keene and Avi Loeb and Gary Nolan and all the rest of the gang. You know, that's Mellon and company. Mm-hmm. You know, with Hal Putoff and Jim Semivan and the rest of them. So I don't know how that helps them. It didn't on Twitter. A lot of more people are questioning Mellon now. You know, it's been 7 years, their operation, and they've come forward with nothing solid. Nothing. Just more stories, hot air. You know, proof is very hard to come by. How do you believe anyone? Photographs, video. You know, Grush could have come to the hearing with a chunk of a UFO and a video and a photograph. Well, that's great, but in our now with AI, any video or photo is, forget it. You know, well, evidence can be cobbled up artificially.
Well, just a few days ago, the Seoul Foundation released a bunch of videos from their symposium from November of 2023, and you know, the videos of many of the people that you just mentioned. And the Seoul Foundation is ostensibly presenting a scientific and humanist framework for understanding the UAP phenomenon. And I understand that, you know, from the perspective of academics who have no clue about this, that maybe, you know, this is how you can like soft pedal it to them and open them up. But for those of us that have been following this issue for decades, it just seems to be just a very limited effort, a limited hangout from the beginning to just hide the deeper truths from coming out. So you know, is the Seoul Foundation really there to kind of like educate mainstream scientists and others about the UFO phenomenon, or is it really just a limited hangout?
I think it's worse than that. Shit out of luck is what I call it. Russell Targ emailed me on the Jack Sarfatti forum, and he said he was there and nothing got done. Nothing deep or concrete was ever discussed, or no conclusions, no hard evidence, no nothing. It's another dog and pony show initiative. It's at SRI. It was held at SRI and at Stanford, I believe. That's long been a deep state think tank. So it's a think tank, but it's a very lightweight one. I'm sorry, our scientists around the world, you know, they're very clueless on a lot of stuff. And it's not all their fault. But this is not the place to learn the truth. This is a place to go where they'll talk about, you know, the possibilities of life in the universe. I mean, are you kidding me? You know, I mean, this is what was discussed in the 60s and 70s with Carl Sagan and that crowd, J. Allen Hynek, you know, Project Blue Book, you know, a lot of hot air, a lot of talk about possibilities and all this, and nothing concrete ever gets done. It's one of the people think, oh, it's new, brand new. No, it's not. The people are old enough to remember they come out with these kinds of initiatives and think tanks all the time. But the public isn't, you know, given any semblance of what really goes on. And it's certainly not a top secret one if we know about it. You know, the 2005 meeting, you know, I learned about that this summer with John Peterson. You know, I didn't know anything about it. And I got ONI and CIA eyes and ears on the ground here in D.C., and they didn't know about it. But there were rumors that it happens every 10 years. And they say, fuck it. You know, it's not good for business. It's not good for the military. It's not good for anyone. Nope. So, you know, the Seoul Foundation is hot air and lip service. It's just another fancy thing they're doing, and nothing will get done. They're all talking about around the subject. They're not really doing any, you know, they're not taking a stab at it. And they're not talking about anything concrete, and they're all saying, gosh, it's a mystery needs to be solved. It's not a mystery at all. U.S. military know who's coming and going all the time, 24/7. Yeah. U.S. Navy satellites, U.S. Air Force satellites that are manned. Okay? Neutrino tracking systems in Antarctica, HARP. Oh, we know what the hell's going on. These people, all of them, they're just, they're criminals to my mind. And I don't care if Gary Nolan is a nice person who doesn't know enough to be a criminal. He works for the CIA. He's a big boy. He knows what he's doing. You know, these people are just unconscionable. This is what the public gets, a semblance of something being done about disclosure, but not anything close to the real thing.
Well, there was an article published recently in the Spectator. This is one of the one Britain's, I don't know if it's a tabloid or just a more respectable newspaper, but it supposedly had consulted a number of British scientists, and it seemed that there was a disclosure plan that the British scientific establishment was backing, and it's got three steps. The first step would be to announce that they found biosignatures, that the James Webb Space Telescope has detected biosignatures. So that's already apparently happened. They're just waiting for the confirmation. The second step is going to be that, well, we found technosignatures, so we know there's intelligent ET life out there somewhere on a distant exoplanet. And third, they're going to say that ETs are here and they're walking amongst us. So what do you think of that plan?
Well, this is another thing John Peterson and I talked about. I mean, I understand the slow disclosure rollout. I don't want there to be mass unrest and suicides and things like that. I don't. But they've waited too long. The public, generally speaking, because of the movies and TV and because of social media and the internet, they've woken up faster than they had planned. And they're implementing this slow rollout, you know, semblance of disclosure operation that would have worked 30, 35 years ago. Not today. People are going to get tired of that real quick. It's you know, they're trying. It's like a bunch of old men in their 80s and 90s sitting around a table going, gosh, wasn't it great in the old days? Maybe we should bring back the Model T. That'll show these new kids that electric cars are bullshit, you know. If they see the simple, and they become these Luddites, you know, they're thinking that the old tactics and the old ideas will work. No plan survives the battlefield, as the military will tell you. This is an old plan, and it's not going to survive the battlefield of today. It's going to fall apart. It's already falling apart, at least on social media. the disclosure topics, the UFO topic, you know, it's already falling apart. So, you know, they're sticking to it because they just don't know what else to do. Yeah, they'll roll out that stuff on CNN and all that, you know, but as soon as it starts to be boring and repetitive and childish, people are going to get tired of it. Human race is very curious. We all are. And they will start to tear it down. And then it's going to be even worse because, you know, we're never going to get disclosure from the government side or the military side or the corporate side. They will never disclose anything big or important or relevant. We have to do it. We have to tear it down and claw our way through the doors. It's the only way. They put all this cement walls between us, but now they've cemented themselves into a corner. And yeah, I think there's a gray hat and ET initiative on the inside pushing for this. And now they have some horsepower. They didn't 30 years ago. They didn't in 2005, but maybe now. And, you know, so it's going to be pushing from the inside and pushing from the outside. That's the only way we're going to get through this wall because it's made of solid black granite.
Well, I know, you know, we talked in the past about this military insider that I've been working with since 2008, JP, who's still serving for the Army. He's still active and he's being given... He's gone on a number of missions where he's gone into these underground bases, seen spaceports, non-human civilizations, working with the US Air Force Space Command, and I imagine that would also include Northern Command. So he says he's been given the green light to kind of continue to talk about this by white hats. So, I mean, are these white hats, are they great hats in the military wanting this to come out now?
Within the military industrial corporate intelligence complex, I don't think you're going to find a lighter shade than light gray. There are no white hats. If there are, they're either dead or locked up somewhere. I really don't believe there's white hats. What is a white hat anyway? We're taught the whole duality thing. You know, if you spin the yin and yang symbol, you get gray. It's all shades of gray. You know, I'm not saying I'm a saint or anything. You know, I'm not. We're all flawed. But inside that world, no, there's no white hats. It's easy to say that, white hat, black hat. You know, it's, people like easy black and white answers. Well, there's none of that. Everything is shades of gray. It's all nuanced. Boy, the general public does not like nuance. They want everything easy to understand, and none of it is. So that's a technical point. You know, I could disagree on that, but there's no white hats. But, you know, if he's telling the truth, then that's good. I don't know. All I know is stuff from my experience and the people that I have access to, and it's not a big circle. So, I mean, I'd like to think there's peaceful galactic councils with our best interests at heart out there. I hope there is. I think there are. But it really is mysterious. They tell us, well, you need to disclose. You need to grow up on your own. And it's like, okay. But we're being genocided and human trafficked out the yin-yang and tortured, murdered, killed, and wars and stuff like that. And it just keeps going on decade after decade after decade after decade. So, okay, my philosophy is if this is how a race in our universe matures, that's completely 100% fucked up. That's a cruel, nasty way. A lot of ETs have said, oh, you guys have it the worst. Why? Why do we have it the worst? You know, it seems to me a lot of these highfalutin ETs and higher dimensions, I don't know if they've been through what we've gone through. They might have gone through a much lighter version. You know, and it's like, well, how do they become 10th dimensional or 11th dimensional and giving us all this advice down through the dimensions and all their ambassadors? It's like, have you been through this? Because this is a really horrible way for a species to evolve and mature. It's pretty harsh. I understand you need to learn hard knocks and, you know, go to the school hard knocks. I get all that. But man, it's disgusting. Who thought of that? So, you know, that's what I conclude. You know, all this stuff, it really pisses me off. All these ETs, people channeling ETs, and they say, oh, everything's going to be wonderful. We love you. Yeah? Screw you. What have you done for us lately? You know, if my soul ever, you know, goes up the food chain, I'm not going to wait till a species is half dead and you know, got nanites in our systems from viruses and we're being pedo trafficked and murdered and genocide and wars. You know, why do you need to get to that severe level for so long to evolve up the dimensional chain? There's a disconnect somewhere. So that's all my thinking goes.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't add up.
Well, I know we get a lot of very positive perspectives from people claiming that they're in touch with different extraterrestrial races. I think, you know, the contactee accounts, you know, people that have had genuine physical contact as opposed to channelers. I think the channelers, you know, that information to me is very dicey because you never know who's on the other side. But with the contactees, people that are going up into the ships and are being given all this access and information, it seems that their information can give us that kind of like overview of what's going on behind the scenes and why the galactics are kind of waiting. I mean, you go back to that whole Haim Eshed thing where apparently he was told that Trump was told by this Galactic Federation that humanity wasn't ready that for disclosure yet because our technology wasn't yet up to speed.
No, that's complete bullshit to me. When? You know, the human race, the way it's going, it's never going to be ready for disclosure, ever. That's the whole point. So when people have physical contacts with ETs, I mean, I don't know. I'm just, you know, my logic mind goes to, how do you know they're on the up and up? You don't. Because unless we have, you know, incredible psychics with us who can read their minds and say, well, they're telling the truth or they're not telling the truth or, you know, all that stuff. But to say the human race isn't ready yet, I've heard that all my life. The ETs can go to hell. The human race at this rate will never be ready. The deep state is too powerful. The worldwide media is corrupt. The governments are corrupt. Militaries and police forces are corrupt. How are we ever going to be mature at this rate? We won't. And we might be wiped out. Okay, well, I guess they weren't ready. Tough shit. Wow. Thanks, universe. Thanks a lot.
Well, how do you think catastrophic disclosure is going to come about? I mean, if we've reached this point, they've been delaying the disclosure for decades. Now we've passed the point of any kind of limited disclosure scenario working. So how do you think it's going to play out? What will catastrophic disclosure look like?
I think another powerful nation with a powerful military is going to disclose for us. And we're going to be backpedaling on the back feet forever. And when people start to connect dots that, you know, money is not needed and people are kept poor and starving for no reason other than geopolitics and, you know, people wanting it that way, roundtables. How does anyone think it's going to go? It's not going to go well at all. There's no peaceful way to do it, not now. You know, I don't care if they come down with, you know, the second coming of Jesus or the third coming of Yahweh, or I don't give a shit. Fake alien invasion. They'll probably do that because they're treating everyone as children, but children understand war. Those are our enemies. Join the Space Force. Fight. You know, join the Space Navy. You know, if my grandson has to do that someday, I mean, it's just horrendous at this point. It's never going to go well. They had a chance in the 70s after the Great Awakening of the 1960s, and they threw it away. And now it's a mess because with AI coming on, people aren't going to know what to believe. Deep fake videos. You could have all the proof in the world on video or whatever. How could you prove it was real now that the AI is quickly maturing? And you know the military has a mature version. They've had it probably 40, 50 years. You know, that's how a lot of these spacecraft fly. You know, they have some type of AI with them, as well as a psychic pilot. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, I don't have a lot of positive views. It just keeps getting worse. You know, my mind adds it all up, and it doesn't look good. You know, it's we're way beyond. They could have done it in the 70s with Sagan and Hynek and everybody on board, and the peaceful nature. We were coming off of Vietnam. That was horrible. But, you know, everyone had a, you know, the 1970s, people, unless you're old enough to remember, all I can tell you is in Washington, D.C., we had the best race relations we ever had. And then they threw it all away in the 80s with crack cocaine and, you know, all the other, you know, geopolitical events and everything. And the deep state put the toothpaste back in the tube, called everyone a Roswell crazy. And then in the 90s, you know, people started, you know, talking about the internet. And first thing I found on the internet was MJ-12 files. I mean, I knew in 1994 this was going to be a game changer. Yes, people are understandably ignorant and they don't understand what's going on in the universe and our reality, but the internet's going to, it's all out there for you to find. It's just a matter of believing it and understanding how the dots connect. But it's going to happen more and more. And so I don't think, you know, it's never going to come from the government or military side ever. It's going to come from another country. Mm-hmm. And man, are they going to fry our ass? They're going to drag our ass through the cactus, as my dad would say. They really are. And the American people is going to be dragged along with the politicians and the generals and admirals and all the corporate guys and the elite people, you know, like my grandfather and hell, me and Chris and, you know, all the other big families will be dragged through the cactus. And, you know, I'm sorry for the general public, but unfortunately, we're all in on it. We voted for these assholes. Okay. And they passed the laws that protect the deep state and the black budgets. We all got blood on our hands. It's very sad. I'm sorry, we do. Some people have more blood than others, but we all have blood on our hands. And so that's how I see disclosure going, and it's just going to be a god-awful mess. It really is. And, you know, these people have dragged their feet and dragged their feet and dragged their feet because of profits and technology and power. And, you know, part of it's just who we are as the human race is sort of ingrained in us. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of an artificial thing that's been ingrained. We're really loving, cooperative, friendly people. I mean, look at that hurricane. I tell people, you get a Cat 5 hurricane, what happens afterwards? Yeah, there's some looting and stuff. But mostly people are helping each other out. That's who it is to be human. So I can only hope there's going to be a lot of that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think humans are innately empathic and supportive of one another in times of crisis. And I think you've tapped into what's coming, which is going to be a major crisis with this whole catastrophic disclosure scenario playing out one way or the other. And you've got decades of experience and insights and insider knowledge to share. So, so people can, you know, get Sanity Was a Luxury and go to your website, johnwarnerthefourthauthor.com. So any final words you want to say to people?
Yeah, in that book, I write about a fictional meeting that I think took place somewhere. And it's with Navy and Army Air Corps people and Oppenheimer and John G. Trump and Van Bush and Hubble and everyone in there going, what? It's in the middle of the war. And they're like, what are the Germans up to? And how do we deal with all these UFO crashes and Foo Fighter reports, which were in both theaters of war? They were in the Pacific as well. And so it's two chapters of it. And I'm really proud of that because I worked on it long and hard and I did a lot of research. I think something like that did happen. And they were like, holy shit, we're way behind the Germans. We've got to do something now. And, you know, the Gustav Gudden was a small part of their Wunderwaffe program. Small, big, whatever you want to call it. But it was significant. The Germans just didn't build it because of Hitler's ego. They built it because they knew they had exotic technology, weapons, and ordnance coming down the pike.
Oh, fantastic. So I recommend people just go to, Amazon, Sanity Was a Luxury, or go to your website to order a copy.
And I don't take profit. I give all my profit. I work with wounded veterans twice a year at my farm with my wife. And all profits go to wounded veteran charities. So it's not like I'm, you know, there's this whole undercurrent in Twitter and the disclosure movement about people grifting. And while there are some people trying to make a buck off all this, that's a small part of the problem. Most of it is just everyone's ego. I mean, we've all got them. It's about how to keep it under check or not doing that. And so, you know, hopefully we can suss our way through that, because that's really not a big issue. That's a smaller sideshow issue. So.
Well, thanks, John, for being on ExoPolitics today.
Hey, thanks for having me. You know, I wish I had better news, you know, but yeah, you know, the human race is pretty plucky. You know, we're pretty creative. We'll dig ourselves out of this hole. We've dug ourselves out of others. So. I do have some optimism.
Yep. Same here.
You have been listening to ExoPolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe to this channel. Join or start a conversation in the comments. Take the time to explore the vast library of best-selling books, webinars, and podcasts by Dr. Sala. Visit exopoliticstoday.com. Thank you.